Welcome to Deeply Disturbing Things,
the podcast.
I'm Macy.
And I'm Naomi.
And we're two professional counselors who like to talk about deeply disturbing things.
Dive in. We believe laughter's the best medicine.
Yes, we do.
Cheers.
Cheers. Skål.
Skål.
I watched some Salute. Random Viking show earlier today. All right. Check-ins. What you got? What you working with?
I was going to read a little excerpt from my diary.
I'm so excited.
I mean, it's not all fun and games, I have to say, but I thought, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is just being for my selfish needs.
This is, wanting if this to share podcast this. Is nothing, wait, if this podcast is something, it is about our selfish needs.
Okay. So it starts when I'm a month away from being 13. So I'm like 12. And it starts off fairly innocent, but still, like, I can see, like, that I was a troubled kid for sure. Okay, so April 4th, 1985, I write the beginning Thursday.
So ominous.
And then weirdly, I'm writing to Jazz. I don't know what that means.
Wait, to Jazz, like Jazz is a person? Or yeah, Jazz.
I don't know if, like, at that time I felt like I needed to address my diary to a person, but that's how I started anyway. And my penmanship is like on point. I don't know if you can.
I can't see that. I don't
know how to make you see that, but my penmanship does not look like this now. But in sixth grade or seventh grade or whenever this was, like, that was a big thing. Like, you wanted to write really nicely. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Just like Anne Frank.
Wow.
I know. Opening words.
Wow.
Just like Anne Frank. I'm starting the diary off with notice of a birthday. It's so dramatic. Only this one isn't mine.
Oh,
it's, wow, it's so my well-written. Mother's. Mm. She is turning 31 today. It sounds so awfully old after years and years of 20 this and 20 that.
It sounds young to me.
Me and Marnie, who's my sister. I'm explaining this to my diary.
You're like, yeah, you're narrating your own life.
Yes, I was such a fucking weirdo. Me and Marnie, who's my sister, made a makeshift clown out of things around the house. For my mother. She loved it.
Who does that? A makeshift clown? Did she like clowns or were you being a dick?
I said she loved it in the next sentence. I don't know. She did not like clowns, to my knowledge.
Okay, that was probably sarcasm then. The 12-year-old.
Probably. Yeah, it's probably being an ass. I suppose it was pretty good. I'm patting myself on the back now. We also made a card.
You're narrating.
I'm narrating. Well, I had not read this ever after I wrote this. So just this going into this, it's been an experience for present Naomi. Getting to know old Naomi from the past. It had a dollar on one of the pages. But in place of George, I glued in Mom's picture. I think you can get in some trouble for defacing legal government money.
Well, look at you using big words and, you know, teasing authority.
Yeah, you can see the roots are there for sure. So Mom's face is on top of George's. And then here is, like, not great. Like, obviously I was hypersexualized and not aware of it. I wonder if he was any good in bed. He probably never would have let any woman on the top, though. What the fuck? And I'll leave you on that cliffhanger. More to come next time.
That is amazing.
This is like those old radio shows where, like, you'd have to tune in next week for the rest of the story.
Tune in next time.
Tune in next time for the rest of that day.
We'll call these Naomi's life. The Naomi Diaries.
April 4th, 1985, which was my mother's birthday. Is my mother's birthday still.
That's good. I have literally nothing that will top that. So I think we should just get started.
All right. Who goes first?
I go first today.
Oh, yay. I'm excited.
I know. Okay. So I'm going to kind of get up here a bit. Okay. So I'm going to talk today about Nostradamus.
I guess I'll take that off my list.
Take it off your list. Okay.
That was on my list.
Take it off.
I'm taking it off.
Doing it. Doing it now.
Deleted.
Gone. Okay. So I think Nostradamus is like pretty well known, at least kind of the name. But really this ties in with if anything catastrophic happens or something terrible occurs, people want to assign almost like, hey, we knew this would happen, almost like that the world has a bigger picture at play. So we say things like a prophecy, someone knew that this was going to happen. Therefore, there might be a way to know these things ahead of time, or that there's mm-hmm. some meaning involved in these tragic things that happen.
We humans love to make meaning.
We're such meaning makers. So Nostradamus is really one of the most commonly known people, even though they would call these prophecies. He himself did not claim the name prophet, and in several statements actually said that he is not a prophet. So just to put that out there, that he did not claim this himself. So he was credited with prophesizing dozens of pivotal episodes in history. And I'll go through a few of these, but some of them include the rise of Adolf Hitler, assassination of John F. Kennedy, and the World Trade Center.
Wow, those are some biggies.
Yeah. And there's even more, but there's...
How about COVID? Did he predict COVID?
I don't know. I'm sure something will come up at some point for that. But really, it's those big major historical points. And there's a lot of people who are very Nostradamus, I don't know, bros. They very much believe in the prophecies, and they assign the meaning from his text to the events. And when we kind of walk through, you'll see how some of it can be interpreted, I guess. So first of all, Nostradamus is actually the Latin name of Michael de Nostradam. He was a physician and an astrologer in 16th century France. There's a lot of mixed information about his history, and actually I found a bunch of conflicting things. So I decided just to go with the facts that were kind of similar across. He was born in 1503, educated, well-to-do family, and he received a broad religious education. His father's side was Jewish, but had converted to Roman Catholicism. Either when he was young, I believe, or when he was born is when that happened. By some accounts, the heritage led Nostradamus to study Jewish scriptures, as well as the book of New Testament. And throughout his life, according to legend, Nostradamus was interested in the apocalyptic prophecies in the book of Revelation, as well as the Kabbalah, which is a mystical branch in Judaism.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So he was all about that.
I don't know a ton about it myself.
I've
looked into it a little bit, but
I was wondering if it was kind of like a whole subset or something like that.
Yeah, it's about it. Yeah, it's not like Judaism. It's like,
gotcha,
like a mystical
branch.
I call it branch, but yeah, kind of like a side thing of Judaism,
like a once a month meetup sort of deal. Okay, so he left home in 1522 to study medicine in Montpellier in France. After he completed his education, he briefly worked as a professor of medicine before practicing as a physician in southern France. So he really had that physician side as his main practice, and he was helping people and treating bubonic plague. So that was his main focal point. And he actually helped a lot of ill patients, but he did lose his child and his first wife to the plague in 1538. So you can see and maybe important to keep in mind that the plague obviously is very central in his experiences during this time. So his writings are now referred to as the Centuries. And this was published over installments over several years. It consists of 1,000 quatrains, which are four-lined verses collected in a group of 100.
So, is that the way he organized it, or is that the way other people have organized it?
That's the way he organized it. So they are, the quatrains are very specific, and he intended them to be that way. However, there are portions of what he's written that have been integrated into other work. So you do have to make sure that what you're reading is actually fully his writing and not integrated with other people's.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So this doesn't refer to like centuries as in like period of time. This actually just has to do, his actual title for it was The Prophecies of Michael Nostradamus. So pretty simple title, but it refers to the organizing of the structure of the work.
Okay.
Okay.
So we called it The Prophecies, but he didn't want to take the title of prophet.
Yes.
Okay. That, I mean, you can see how that might confuse people though.
You could see that. And some other things he says are could be confusing as well.
These are my prophecies. Don't call me prophet.
Okay. He did say he was able to predict the future. So yeah. There's see, also that.
Mixed messaging.
Right.
So come on, Nostradamus. Stick to your brand.
He said it was through a combination of astrological study and divine inspiration. So he had long studied the supposed relationship between the movement of heavenly bodies and earthly events, and claimed an angelic spirit helped him understand how these forces would manipulate themselves. And he used things like meditation, generally focusing on fire or water, possibly while under the influence of some mild hallucinogens.
Oh, like what?
Nutmeg.
Oh, shit. Nutmeg. Going for it, Nostradamus.
Down with the nutmeg. And he would meditate late at night, and he would claim that he would see and understand events in the near and distant future. So that's where this is coming from.
Is that your dog farting?
No, he's having an asthma attack.
Oh, Boo Bear.
Boo Bear, sit up, bud.
That's so sad.
Sorry. Sit up. I know. He likes to roll kind of on his back, and then it makes it like get allergies kicking. But when he rolls back over on his tummy, he does better.
Then it's fine.
He just had all his doggy shots yesterday.
Boo, you cannot back sleep, buddy.
And he always seems like in a shock when it happens because it wakes him up. He's better.
It's like sleep apnea for a dog.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous when it happens during client calls. I have to apologize for my dog doing that.
Doggy CPAPs, because I think that's what he needs.
Right? Okay. Oh, yep. I was going to say there's usually a little leftover.
Okay. A little leftover. Oh, a boo.
All right. So he wrote each section predominantly in French with some Latin, Greek, and Italian. You know what this just made me think of? Abu made me think of. Lusa.
Oh, Lusa, oh, R.I.P.
Hearing her in the background snoring and farting around us all the time.
Oh, I miss that girl. She's the best dog ever.
Oh, I'm going to have to find one of our episodes where Lusa was there that we were talking to her. Because we have those things recorded.
Oh, she's internalized forever.
Forever. Now, so is Boo for that. Okay. So the accounts are pretty confusing because he wrote them in French. However, some pieces or some parts have also been put in Latin, Greek, Italian. So sometimes that confuses how it's interpreted. They are full of esoteric metaphors and anagrams. They include few dates or specific geographical references and are not arranged in chronological order. Helpful, right? So in the preface, a letter from Nostradamus to his son, Caesar, a child from his second marriage, the verses were intended to be mystifying, he said. Nostradamus said he was afraid he would be persecuted and his work would be destroyed if authorities in his time fully understood his predictions.
Oh, so he's speaking in riddles to be like
intentionally. Yeah. Okay. According to him, his cryptic prophecies would be better understood by enlightened people in the future. And of course, people now think they're so enlightened that they understand it.
Oh my God, like I'm enlightened. I can obviously interpret that.
Right? So, I mean, obviously he meant us, right?
Yeah, I think
it's,
I mean,
obviously the
we look hard enough, it says Macy and Naomi in those quatrains.
Great, because we're gonna go over some stuff. So there are, I mean, there's some predictions and stuff, and we'll go through these predictions and stuff. Just keep in mind there's a lot of skepticalness about these predictions. One, because I mean, the hits for like, oh, that's related to this, they tend to either be random chance or creative interpretation, because again, he doesn't say anything specifically. So it's all interpretation based. There's about 1,000 quatrains, most containing more than one prediction, and all but a few describe in vague, obscure terms. So out of all this writing, like a few pieces will be picked out and applied. So keep in mind what I'm going to read here in a minute for the first example. Like I'm going to read you maybe like a few sentences out of 100, and we're just picking our favorites because that's how this game works.
That is how it works.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, so let's do the September 11th first.
Oh my God, okay.
Okay, so following the terrorist attacks in the US, there was a lot of renewed interest in Nostradamus because of this.
I think I remember that, actually.
Did you? Yeah, so there was actually a lot of, I don't know, like email threads going around.
You say it like it's an archaic term.
Email? Who sends email communications about?
Was somebody faxing something?
Did you really send me something you wanted me to read via email? Okay, so this is the message. This message was included in one of the quatrains. In the city of God, there will be great thunder. Two brothers torn apart by chaos. Mm-hmm. While the fortress endures, the great leader will succumb. The third big war will begin when the big city is burning. I know, so, right? So the
I actually don't hear anything that would predict.
I'll break it down.
A terrorist attack on the World Trade Centers.
The two brothers refers to the Twin Towers. The fortress refers to the Pentagon, and the great leader refers to President Bush, and the big city refers to New York.
But what about the city of God? Like, how is New York the city of God?
So I'm actually just going to tell you that right now, this whole piece is all fabrication. So this actually wasn't from Nostradamus, but it was spread around with saying that it was from Nostradamus. So this has actually been debunked.
Fake news, hashtag.
But you see how like it can quickly make people think about it.
Because most people don't look at the source of any information. They just take it like if they think it's like their trusted source, they're just going to go with it.
So it contained, basically they pulled a couple pieces from what Nostradamus said and then fabricated the rest around it. So many Nostradamus followers believe that both quatrains referred to the attack on the World Trade Center. However, there's like everything's just kind of wrong. Like the actual date is not far off, but it's off. The latitude is not far off, but it's off. Mm-hmm. And they're really just trying to pay attention to the pieces that fit. So, okay, now to it. Let's do some of the ones that haven't been debunked, at least. Yeah, that haven't been proven as false, or not false, but made up.
Like, so, is this book available somewhere? Like, you can buy it on Amazon, or
I'm sure you can.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first one is the death of Henry II. So this was way back. The prediction was, okay, here's the quote from the book. Okay. The young lion will overcome the older one on the field of combat in a single battle. He will pierce his eyes through a golden cage. Two wounds made one, then he dies a cruel death.
It's so cryptic.
Right? So what actually happened in the summer of 1559, King Henry II of France, the older one, lined up to joust the younger son, or the younger brother, Comte de Montgomery, the quote, young lion, 6 years his junior, on the field of France, which they say the field of combat was referring to France. Both had lions on their shields. In their final pass, Montgomery's lance tilted up and burst through the king's visor, splinting to pieces. So it talked about he will pierce his eyes through a golden cage.
Got it.
Yeah. Two shards, one through the eye, pierced him, and one through the temple that lodged through his head. So two wounds made one. Henry suffered for 10 days. And they're referencing then he died a cruel death before dying in his bed.
Oh, Henry.
Yeah.
I think that's the name of a candy bar in the old days.
Probably, yes. What do you think about that?
I think, and you may be going to touch on this, but...
Maybe not.
I think that if his intention is to, like, save the world, was anybody able to read that and do anything, like give anybody warnings or try to stop this tragedy from happening?
No. And I mean, if you think about it too, like some of these things, if you read the other parts, it says in a single battle, you know, this wasn't really a battle. This was a jousting. Like this was actually for fun. So it kind of like, if you look at the other pieces that you don't focus in on, it all of a sudden doesn't line up as well as you think it does.
Are there any of his where people are like really agree that it really was talking about an event?
I mean, it seems like the people who believe that Nostradamus is correct and a prophet absolutely 100% believe that all of these were predicted.
Oh, all of these. Okay.
Yes.
Were there any where you were like, I'm all in with this? Like, yes, Nostradamus. You call that shit.
Not really. Okay. I mean, to me, so like my dad writes poetry and short stories and he uses his words to portray meaning and things like that. So to me, it could mean so many things. And it's like the confirmation bias, right? Like if you are looking for something, you're more likely to find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's always after the fact.
Because I would say if there is something in there where we're pretty confident he did make a prediction, like maybe we should be scouring that and trying to stop something before it happens instead of after the fact being amazed how Nostradamus predicted that shit.
Well, and I mean, even if he did, then what good is it if we can't understand the shit he's writing? Maybe we are not the enlightened people to understand. Maybe not.
Speak for yourself, Macy.
So the Great Fire of London is the next one. So the prediction here was the blood of the just will be demanded of London, burnt by fire in the year 66. The ancient lady will fall from her high place and many of the same sect will be killed. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the small fire that started in the bakery of Thomas Farriner on Pudding Lane.
Pudding Lane. Cute.
Right. On September 2nd, 1666.
Oh, so the year lines up.
Uh-huh. Turned into a 3-day blaze that consumed the city. One of the explanations of the blood of the just refers to millions of flea-carrying rats that were killed. And peasant deaths were not recorded at that time, but it has long been held that 6 people perished in the fire as well. And one of the ones that I read said that the ancient lady that might just be talking about the city itself of London being an older city, and that falling from her high place kind of being that status in society.
I mean, I give him credit for calling the year, but how many fires
and he said London.
I mean,
he
did say okay. London. Were there other fire? You know,
the blood of the just will be demanded of London, burnt by the fire in the year 66. The ancient lady will fall from her high place and many of the same sect will be killed.
So I give him more credit when there's like an exact like time and place called out ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so let's give it and actually
so I give him more credit for that one.
And this one, again, these are actually very long. So this piece is the piece that has been kind of deemed the most relevant. But the Great Fire of London one did have the most people that were kind of the most lean towards hey, like, at least it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I give them a 3 out of 5 on that.
3 out of 5. Okay. What was the first one? For Henry stabbing. I mean, the cage, the 2 split. I mean,
kinda. No? I'm giving that a 1.
Okay.
It was a reach.
All right. This one is the French Revolution.
Oh, okay. let's hear it.
All right. From the enslaved populace, songs, chants, and demands. While princes and lords are held captive in prisons, these will in the future be headless idiots, be received as divine prayers.
Oh.
So this is 1789. The French people decided they'd had enough of the poor aristocratic rule and revolted. The peasants, which his statement is enslaved populace, took control of Paris and forced their demands on royalty. The aristocracy, the princes and lords, were taken from power, were locked in the Bastille prisons, and beheaded on the guillotine, headless idiots.
I don't know. I mean, can we specifically say there was no date about France?
There's no dates, and it does not specifically say France.
So I'm giving that another 1 out of 5.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. Napoleon. Here we go.
Oh, let's hear this.
Pau, nay, Lauren, will be more of fire than blood. To swim in praise, the great one to flee to the confluence. He will refuse entry to the pious seas. The depraved ones and the durance will keep them imprisoned. Okay, so
I don't hear anything about Napoleon.
Pau, nay, and Lauren are 3 towns in southern France.
Oh, okay. So we're getting a place.
Pau, nay, and he said Loron, Loron. The third city is actually spelled Olorn. So they are spelled different than the last one, but similar.
That could have been him being tricky.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to switch up these letters. Yeah. Nobody will know what I'm talking about.
The capitalization hints that something is hidden within the words and to look further. So those 3 words are completely capitalized. Rearranging them spells out Napoleon Roy or what? Napoleon the King in French.
What? Does it?
Yeah.
Did you test it?
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. I can see it together. Yeah. So Napoleon Roy, which is Napoleon the King in French.
Wait, was Roy his middle name?
No, that Napoleon Roy means Napoleon the King.
I don't
in French.
It does. I don't think Roy means king, does it?
I have no idea.
I'm gonna look it up.
Do that.
I mean, are they saying like short for royale?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, but then that's like a 3-tier stretch.
Yeah, now we're getting,
we're really there. Stretching.
Roi.
Okay.
Roy is king.
There you go.
Okay. But it's not okay.
No, it's Roy. But again, he has replaced like 1 letter on each of those words. Because yeah.
What if Nostradamus was not good at spelling?
Maybe. He spelled many things well, other than the things he didn't. So more of fire than blood is his statement. Refers to the Napoleon's non-noble lineage, more of fire than blood. And the part that says refuse entry to the pieties speaks to Pope Pius, both popes who imprisoned Napoleon.
Okay.
Refused so entry to the pieties. This one has
more specific things.
Yeah, I think a little bit more coded, but it does speak like the pieties definitely speaks to popes refusing entry. So popes refusing entry. I mean, I think the more fire than blood.
I'll give it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I think it's stronger than the last one.
Yeah.
Okay. Louis Pasteur.
Oh.
Ready?
Yes.
The lost thing is discovered, hidden for many centuries. Pasteur will be celebrated almost as a godlike figure. This is when the moon completes her great cycle, but by other rumors, he shall be dishonored.
Is Pasteur spelled correctly?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, it is. Okay. So Louis Pasteur, that's the part where he said Pasteur will be celebrated, is credited with discovering microbial decay. So that's what they're saying. Lost thing is discovered, hidden for many centuries. They're saying that is reference to microbial decay. And then in 1995, the science historian Gelson ran a story in the New York Times illustrating that Pasteur gave a misleading account on his preparation of the anthrax vaccine. And so that's what they're saying is shall be dishonored.
Oh, but we still do pasteurize things.
Yes. Yes.
So it's still relevant.
And they did. I mean, he did by name, but again, yeah, he existed in that time. So it's not like he happened to pinpoint
existed during that same time.
I mean, he had
Pasteur lived during Nostradamus.
Let me see. Hold on. Lawson.
I don't think so. I think it was later.
Pasteur will be celebrated almost as a godlike figure. This is when the moon. Will you look that up?
He was born in 1822.
Because I was just
assuming. So it was like 300 years later.
Later. Okay. So that actually leans a little bit more.
Yeah.
Okay. Pasteur will be celebrated almost as a godlike figure. And he used capital G.
That's true.
Yeah. What I'm curious about is what is that? This is when the moon completes her cycle. I have no idea.
Not sure.
Okay.
Are we talking about periods?
I don't know. Maybe. So, I mean, I'm sure we could make it talk about periods and then it should be.
And then we'll find it.
Yeah. That's how this game works. Okay. So what would you give this one then? I mean, I'm actually more impressed now that I know that.
I'm saying a 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to go with that as well. Okay. Are you ready for some Hitler?
Oh, God, sure.
From the depths of the west of Europe, a young child will be born of poor people.
Wait a second.
Yes.
Marie Pasteur's wife was also a famous chemist and bacteriologist. So that might be the
It could have been about thing. Oh, and it could have been about her.
Yeah. Why are we being like
about the like dude? That?
Yeah.
Look at you. Good job.
You're welcome. Yeah, she's a famous person as well. Marie Pasteur. Yeah.
Oh, they do say, he does say he, but by other rumors, he shall be dishonored.
But that, I mean, the moon thing, was linked to periods. This is when the moon
completes her great cycle, literally talking about a cycle.
So maybe, I got it.
Like when
back then, like people would not like listen to women so much. Maybe it was actually mm-hmm. her invention and he was the one that had to bring it forward so people take it seriously.
Like once she completed her research.
Yes, then he was able to present it and be a, because if she had presented it alone, it would not have been taken seriously.
And so. That might go along with, but by other rumors, he shall be dishonored.
Oh,
okay. I'm moving this up to a solid 4.
No, I'm a 4 too. Yeah, go Marie.
That made me
excited. I'm all in now.
All right. Hitler, here we go. From the depths of the west of Europe, a young child will be born of poor people. He who by his tongue will seduce a great troop, his fame will increase towards the realm of the east. And there's a second part. Beasts ferocious with hunger will cross the rivers. The greater part of the battlefield will be against Hister. Into a cage of iron will the great one be drawn when the child of Germany observes nothing.
Oh, so they do say Germany.
They say Germany and
iron, which
west, is and like, from the west of Europe heading east.
Well, an iron, you know, mm-hmm. is that Russia?
And they say Hister, which is very similar to Hitler.
But it's not.
It's capital H, but it's a capital H. It's a name for sure.
So maybe he like just didn't get the message all the way.
Maybe. Or maybe he intentionally, because remember he said they didn't want people to persecute against him for things that may be to come. So on April 20th, 1889, Hitler was born in Western Europe to very poor parents. Hitler moved to Germany to actions in the years following World War One. So, and that's how he really started getting, like people involved was through his speech. He was very good at public speaking. So by his tongue apart, his fame will increase towards this realm of the East, which would be the Axis alliance with Japan in the East. History is believed to be a spelling error. the German army invading France is the part where he says beasts ferocious with hunger will cross the rivers. And then the great battlefield refers to the Allied powers defeating Hitler. The greater battlefield refers to the Allied powers defeating Hitler.
Yeah, I mean, I like how they actually said Germany.
Yeah. West of Europe. I like that they're kind of pointing some directions, at least.
There are directions.
Yeah.
But I feel like if we really wanted to, we could make that fit something else.
Probably. Like, yeah, because there's not like a year attached to it or anything to pinpoint when.
Yeah.
Well, and I saw too, they didn't. Into a cage of iron will the great one be drawn. I was trying to think of like what could that.
Well, I was thinking the Iron Curtain, like Russia.
Oh, yeah. And because if we want to.
Weren't they marching that direction because they wanted to just take over everything?
Yeah, because they started just trying to take it all. So, I mean, I would probably give this one maybe a 3.
I'm still thinking two and a half.
2.5. Okay.
Because I really feel like there should be mention of the Holocaust. Like, that would be the big thing
kind to warn a big deal people to about. Mention. Well, you're assuming that his intent was to warn. Versus
what is his intent then?
Say, just to mystify, he said.
Well, that's fucked up,
Nostradamus.
I mean, he went through the plague. He should know better.
Yes.
Like, so let's try to leave this world a better place than you found it. Come on, guy.
Okay, so I'm going to go to the next bigger one here. Because there's
now I'm pissed at him. Now I'm mad at him.
Okay. Do you want to hear the atomic bomb one?
Am I going to get more irate?
I mean, maybe.
Right. I'm like, why are you sitting there meditating, writing poems when you're not actually helping anything?
Tripping balls, Nostradamus.
Yeah, come on, Nostradamus.
On that nutmeg. that real good allspice.
I'm pretty sure when I was a teenager, I probably tried to smoke it or eat it or something or make a tea.
I had no idea that was a thing until I read this.
No, I knew all the things when I was little. I tried them all. I tried to smoke a banana peel at one time. I was all in for whatever high I could get.
Or whatever. Okay.
A wild 15-year-old. You'll hear in the diary.
I'm excited. The atomic bomb near the gates and within two cities. There will be scourges like of which was never seen. Famine within plague. People put out by steel, crying to the great immortal God for relief. Okay. So this was...
I'm not hearing any atomic bomb.
They're referring to August 1945, the United States dropping... Again, this is what Nostradamus followers believe. Dropped two atomic weapons on the island of Japan. So that's their within two cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So within two cities. The suffering endured by those in the blast and the radiation, they're saying that that's the crying to the great immortal God for relief, and that the famine within plague, they're talking about that being like, how would somebody who doesn't know what radiation is describe what radiation does? So a famine within a plague is kind of a very specific description.
I feel like we just went through that with the pandemic.
A famine within a plague. I agree.
And the famine was when we couldn't get toilet paper.
Yeah. And then the people put out by steel would be the planes dropping the bombs.
Okay. I don't hear anything that actually talks about that at all.
I would say like a 1.
I feel like it's got to be about a famine within a plague. Like, that was the part that stuck out to me.
Yeah. I mean, famine within a plague is very poetic. I like the imagery it gives.
And it's specific, though.
Yeah, it's very specific.
Like, you already have this plague. Now you're dealing with a famine on top of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is what we've been dealing with, actually. This is very current.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a famine on...
Are you predicting something right now?
Socialization.
Are you predicting current things?
Well, if the plague, okay, let's say the plague doesn't resolve and climate change creates a famine. I mean, that could be.
Yeah, that could be a famine within a plague.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be.
All right. What was your rating, though, for that?
I'm giving that a one. Low. One. The
Me
lowest.
Too. Me too. Okay. And we can't do a zero because we don't know.
No, there's no zero.
We'll give it some air.
We don't zero.
Who knows? We don't zero.
Never say never.
He took the time to write that shit down.
That's right.
he did the drugs.
Nostro.
JFK and RFK assassinations.
Oh my gosh.
So here we go. The great man will be struck down in the day by a thunderbolt. Evil deed.
It was tracking until the thunderbolt.
I know, right?
Great man. Okay, uh-huh. He's famous. You know, people are
thunderbolt. Him. An evil deed foretold by the bearer of a petition. According to the prediction, another falls at nighttime. Conflict at Rheims, London, and pestilence in Tuscany.
Wait, what does London and Tuscany have to do with JFK and RFK?
Okay, so that part they're saying the world mourned.
Oh, fuck me. That's a stretch.
Right? So what happened? The great man, John Kennedy, received numerous death threats. So they're saying that is the petitions and was gunned down, the thunderbolt, in the afternoon of November 22nd, 1963. Then Bobby Kennedy was killed just after midnight on June 5th, 1968, which is the another falls at nighttime. To me, that's the only piece that goes in line.
It wasn't like the same night. I mean, the quatrain makes it sound like it's that night. So I think
true. Happened. Yeah. It just says another falls at nighttime.
Yeah, that, I mean,
it's vague.
Come on. At nighttime.
I'm going to say one. A great man. One. That's pretty vague. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be anybody. And I immediately thought of Thor when you said Thunderbolt.
Okay. And the Challenger one has actually been debunked already.
Oh, that was a fake.
Yeah. So we're just going to skip it. The Death of Princess Diana one also debunked.
So people are putting out fake quatrains.
Or they're taking pieces and making it look like there's more there than there is.
Why, people? Why? Just to create a store.
Death of John F. Kennedy Jr. also debunked.
Oh.
And then the September 11th one we did. There was one that was for November 25th, 2015, that was suspected. So this was for a big earthquake.
Of this year?
2015.
Oh, 2015. Was there an earthquake that year?
Not that I'm aware. I mean, yes, there's earthquakes everywhere all the time. So this says the Sloping Park Great Calamity through the lands of the West and Lombardy, the fire in the ship, plague in captivity, Mercury in Sagittarius, Saturn fading. So what's supposed to happen is a great earthquake is reputedly foretold in this quatrain in the New World, which they're saying is most likely California, is their quote logical choice.
Well, because there's a lot of earthquakes there.
According to astrologists, Mercury in Sagittarius and Saturn fading, this would be, so the next time that Mercury will be in Sagittarius and Saturn in a fading position would be November 25th, 2015.
Okay.
So there you go. I'm sure there was an earthquake. I'm sure there was in California.
Yeah.
Probably right.
Is there anything coming up we should be aware of?
Not that I could find anything that had a date pinned to it, but I'm sure we could find a section and make it. So,
I mean, I think if we can help people.
The problem is what people do is something bad happens and then they go and find text that is alluding to. They don't read it before and make sense of it.
No, I mean, that's the easy part. The hard part is, let's predict the future.
Yes, that part of being correct.
That part of a prophecy. The important part of a prophecy.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure if we look up
the definition of prophecy, it is something about predicting the future.
Yeah, he said he predicted the future, but he did not say he was a prophet.
And this was called the prophecies.
Yes.
Oh, Nostradamus, sucking on too much nutmeg.
He's mystifying us all. So I really think
mystifying himself.
Yeah, I mean, really, I don't know. By 1566, Nostradamus had really bad gout. I heard him for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Made it very hard for him to move, which turned into edema. Is that how you say that? Edema?
Edema, swelling of the limbs.
Limbs. In late June, he summoned his lawyer to draw up an extensive will bequeathing his property plus 3,444 crowns. It's about $300,000 today. Minus a few debts to his wife, pending remarriage, and trust for her sons pending their 25th birthdays and for his daughter. So, on the evening of July 1st, he is alleged to have told his secretary, you will not find me alive at sunrise. The next morning, he was reportedly found dead, lying on the floor next to his bed and his bench.
Well, he got one right.
Well, suppose, it's again, allegedly, like.
Did he write a quatrain?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, because I could only read you like the two paragraphs about his life, because everything has been so like changed by people and rewritten. It's
hard to get real history.
Yeah, it's actually really hard. So, I mean, I'm not going to vouch to any of this really, because everyone's hands have been in it.
Get your hands out.
Dirty hands have been in it.
Hands are dirty.
So he was buried in a French chapel. That's it. There you go. Nostradamus predicting things.
I think the idea of prophecy.
Smoking the nutmeg.
Is interesting.
I mean, I think if more people knew he was like doing hallucinogens and that was pushed versus the religious fervor, maybe.
Well, I just looked at prophecy. And Wikipedia says it's supposed to be a messages that are communicated by a deity.
And maybe that's why he's saying he's not a prophet.
Okay.
Because he said that he was helped to know how to interpret. It wasn't that he was, I don't know, mystified.
So a prophet is like a vessel.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia.
Yeah, which would be like God like talking to him through him versus him interpreting things and getting some good guidance on how to interpret things from an angelic source and drugs.
Yes. And nutmeg.
Yes. I did not know nutmeg was a thing. Is that like a strong high? I mean, not that we don't promote I'm just generally
remember
curious.
How you do it. Like you smoke it, snort it. Like, is it a topical edible?
I've eaten nutmeg before and things, and I never got high. I know of. I feel like there should be a warning sticker on that bottle now.
I think this is what happened with me, is I like couldn't ever eat enough to get to a high.
Oh. How much nutmeg did you consume? Should I be
not
worried?
Enough? Not
it's probably
enough.
Like a little part of your brain that has a bunch of nutmeg powder in it. It's just stored after you die. You'll donate your brain to science. They'll cut it open. It'll go poof.
Nutmeg is a popular spice that can give a person a high similar to that of some hallucinogenic drugs if they consume too much. But it has to be a lot. I tried to get to that point when I was a teenager
this really crosses that dangerous line of the cinnamon challenge that stupid people do on stupid
platforms.
But I want
to know, how do you do it? Like, maybe I was doing it wrong.
I mean, you probably were doing it wrong if you didn't get
how
it.
How do you use nutmeg as a hallucinogen? Google, let's see what happens.
She is so tagged on so many things.
How do you get high on the nutmeg you bought for eggnog is the name of the article.
Do tell. This is also very fall. That's a very topical, yeah, talking topical. About nutmeg. Look at you, Nostradamus knew that. He knew that I was going to pick this to talk about it so we could talk probably, about nutmeg.
Yes. This is one of those articles that starts out with a lot of stories that I'm trying to scroll through.
I hate it so much. Nobody wants to know your story.
I just wanted to, do you just drink it? Like, I want to know, what do? I think I tried to drink it.
Like high concentrations of it?
Yeah, like probably with water or something. It should be noted it's extremely difficult. It's not exactly soluble. I think that's what I came into. Swallowing it is much like trying to choke down sawdust. I think that was my problem. So I guess you do eat it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get
even everything saying to that high. Everything saying that, like, I doubt that you would enjoy it, and willing to predict that you wouldn't try it twice. But like,
but Nostradamus was all in.
He like was all in. Stealing his wife's nutmeg, you dirty dog.
I'm in the mood for some nutmeg. Put on some extra nutmeg on my eggnog.
It says that nutmeg contains small amounts of a drug called myristicin, an oil of the spice containing, oh my gosh, albenzenine, derivatives and terpenes. It's chemically similar to mescaline. Oh, the active compound in peyote, and may be converted into the body similar to like an amphetamine and like psychedelics.
I think you have to eat a lot.
Ranging from around 2 tablespoons up to a whole container. Yeah. It's actually not as much as I was thinking.
But think about trying to eat that. Like,
I don't want to. I'm never going to do this. We do not condone doing this.
You would choke. Don't do this. No, we don't condone. But I did try at one point when I was a teenager, and nothing happened. So.
Yeah, I mean, disappointed. You may get mild floating sensations, anxiety, fear, and feelings of impending doom to full-blown delirium.
Sounds like a bad trip.
These don't occur immediately. You may have to wait up to 4 hours.
But those could be naysayers.
And up to 48 hours if you swallowed enough. The after effects are memorable and pretty miserable. A heavy hangover and a nasty gastrointestinal upset, including nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. And your heart can race and make you feel uncomfortable. I mean,
I don't want a diarrhea out nutmeg later.
I don't know, Nostradamus. Were other drugs that hard to get a hold of? I mean, why? Kind
of experience.
Why is that the drug of choice?
Well, I think it was on hand.
I guess.
I think he liked the baked goods.
He did what's on hand.
Yeah.
And maybe it didn't mess him up too much. Maybe he just liked a little buzz. Who knows?
Or he was a liar face, or these are poor historians and it's not even true.
Maybe these people aren't bakers at all.
Okay. I'm going to get another beer.
Okay, you do that.
Talk to the peeps.
I'm going to keep telling them about nutmeg. So there's toxic effects that are so unpleasant that very few people actually try it. You can actually get nutmeg poisoning. Real thing. It's pretty rare though, oftentimes unintentional in small doses, typically in children if they inhale it. So be careful with your children around that nutmeg, or if they get it into their eyes. Those in early adolescence are most likely to experiment with nutmeg because it's easy to obtain. Additionally, it has been mixed with other drugs and has prompted medical intervention. So maybe just like don't try nutmeg, except for in a nice like chai latte, perhaps. I think a chai latte can use a little nutmeg. Here she is.
I'm back.
Hey there.
I thought about bringing some nutmeg, but I didn't.
There's dangers for children if they if they induce, if they intake some of it in their mouth or their eye.
What? You're supposed to put it in your eye?
No, but like, watch out that your child doesn't inhale it there. That's the word I was looking for. Gosh. Make sure your child doesn't inhale it or put it in their eye.
Oh, I will. Believe me. I will make sure of that. Thank you.
I just wanted to give you that warning.
Thank you for that PSA.
You're welcome. It's your turn.
Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
This topic is a spinoff off my last topic, which you probably don't remember. So I will remind you, it was the Zoot Suit Riots.
I just posted that today. I'm well aware.
Well, sometimes when I go to send you the snippet, I cannot remember what we talked about.
Oh, yeah. No, you I barely remember.
I was like, Macy, what was your topic? Mm-hmm. So here's the link. In the opening scene of the movie American Me,
mm-hmm.
which I mentioned, it depicts the Zoot Suit Riots.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk about the American Me murders.
Mm.
And I don't think you've seen this movie.
I don't think I have.
So it's a really, really good movie. I have to say that. It's very good. And I really want to know if your dad has seen it and what his thoughts are.
Probably hasn't.
Well, there's prison. It's a prison movie.
How old, though?
1992.
What's it called?
American Me. Will you text him and see if he's seen it?
I don't know what my phone is. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe so, text me later to tell me to do things and I'll do things.
Okay. So American Me came out in 1992 and it portrayed a fictionalized version of the story of the leader of the Mexican mafia. So note I said fictionalized version.
Okay.
It starred Edward James Olmos. Do you know who he is, that actor?
No, but I probably would recognize him if I saw him. I'm really bad with names.
He's been in a lot of stuff.
I'm sure I've seen him. I'm just bad.
So I wish I could show you a picture, but I don't know how.
Well, you can share the screen with me.
Okay. So this is, you see him, his face?
Yes.
So he's been in a lot of things. He was in Battlestar Galactica.
Don't recognize him.
Oh, he's been in a ton of shit.
I don't think I've seen Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, who do I know you? Who are you? Are we friends?
You're a Star Wars fan too, right?
All the stars. Battlestar, Star Trek, Star Wars.
All the stars.
Yes, all the stars.
I like some Star Wars.
So he starred in this. He also directed it. So Edward James Olmos. He
sounds like the way to go.
He played a character called Montoya Santana. So the film depicted Montoya Santana's journey through the California prison system and how he created the Mexican mafia, which is known as La M, which means the M in Spanish.
Mm.
So the Mexican mafia was so offended by the film that at least three people were murdered.
Oh, dang.
And the movie's director and star, Edward James Olmos, had a hit on him.
That's scary.
So the Santana character that Olmos played in American Me was based loosely on Mexican mafia co-founder Rodolfo Chayín Cadena. And the way that Santana was portrayed in the movie outraged La M, the Mexican mafia.
Can I help you real quick?
Yeah.
Put your glasses on.
Why? Am I squinting?
You're always squinting when you're reading your laptop.
I was trying to be cute without my glasses.
You're cute without, you don't have to wear them. You look like you're struggling a little bit.
Well, I was struggling, but I wasn't even aware.
Here, I'll put on my glasses.
So I'm so used to struggling.
Look. We match.
Okay. Well, yours are cuter. Mine are my right-eyed glasses. Yours are cute cat eyes.
Thanks.
Okay. So the film particularly outraged the then godfather of La M, Joe Morgan, who was a co-founder of the syndicate and a close friend of Cadena's. Joe Morgan was also depicted in the film, but his character was called JD and played by William Forsythe, who's another famous actor. So the real LA-MA was founded in around 1957 at the Duell Vocational Youth Offender Camp in Northern California. And years later, Cadena, he was now an iconic figure in the West Coast underworld, and he was murdered by members of a rival gang, Nuestra Familia, which means our family, and they were a Northern California gang, Norteña gang. And that was in 1972 that he was murdered. Joe Morgan died of cancer behind bars in 1993. And that was a year after American Me hit the theaters, and only a few months after he'd filed a lawsuit against Olmos and the makers of the film for defaming him and stealing his likeness without providing compensation. Mm. And I've, you know, seen pictures of him, and I've seen the film, and I mean, nobody would say that they weren't trying to portray him. Like, it's so
obvious.
Spot on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here's a picture of the LA-MA, like one of the tattoos that people get. If you're in it, it's like this black handprint with an M in it.
Mm-hmm. I see the L has like a, were those other letters next to the M?
I don't know if they're other letters or if they're just markings. Maybe it's law in the background.
Hmm.
I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, I saw L.
Yeah,
on the front end, so maybe LA-MA.
The other one looks like an I on the other end, but it could be a Roman numeral. Hmm. Roman numerals are big, and numbers are big in the gang name world. So a little more about LA-MA. By the late 1960s, so the California prison system became aware of this gang and the criminal activity, and they broke up the group to try to control the situations. Mm-hmm. So they sent members to different prisons thinking, oh, that'll solve the problem. But what do you think happened?
I think it didn't go well.
Well, it actually helped LA-MA spread, because now they were able to recruit people all over in different prisons.
Oh,
so instead of being like in one prison, now they're everywhere. And they're able to really take control of the California prisons.
That wasn't well thought out.
It wasn't well thought out.
No.
So Emmy members that were on the outside, they had the job of trying to create these new cells on the outside to do crime there. And then members that were paroled would explain the North versus South war that was going on in prison to the young street gang members.
Okay.
You've heard of the Serrano versus Norteño gang stuff in California?
I've heard of it. I'm not probably from like a Netflix something. I'm not going to claim to be an expert.
No, I'm not an expert either. Yeah. But so this was going on. It started in the prisons, but then when paroled members would come out, they would tell that to the young people that were out on the street. And then they were told that if they did go into the prison system, they should align themselves with the other Serranos.
Okay.
And that term Serrano then became adopted by Hispanic street gang members throughout Southern California. And it's still a thing today. So the original meaning of the term really is about this umbrella of gangs who fall under the control of the Mexican mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And out on the street, Serrano sets may have conflict with other Serrano gangs, but in prison, like, they're going to bond together.
Mm-hmm.
For the protection under the leadership of the Mexican mafia. So in prison, you're united. You're all one. Mexican mafia, LA-MA. So according to my research into this, there was like the three big groups. There was the LA-MA. There was the, what was that one called that killed them? Nuestra Familia. And then there was the Black Gang. Oh, and there's also the Aryan Gang. So remember your dad talked about how in prison everything's racially segregated?
Yeah.
Like they would assign like the different blocks were racially segregated. Mm-hmm. So that's totally kind
of
aligned.
And kind of furthers the separation.
Mm-hmm. So there was like if you're white, you go into the Aryan group. Mm-hmm. If you're black, there was like a black gang. And then there was a couple Hispanic Mexican gangs. So Edward James Olmos. Oh, wait, I forgot one part about Lammy. So the Mexican mafia at one point put a stop to drive-by shootings because one of the Mexican mafia members' kids was hit during a drive-by. Mm-hmm. So the 18th Street gang found a workaround. So they're one of the gangs under this umbrella, and it was called the one-foot rule.
Okay.
So they would open the car door and put 1 foot on the ground before shooting.
Because then it's not a drive-by.
I thought that was pretty tricky.
Pretty clever, even though it sounds like that.
I mean, you're still killing people.
Really matter.
In your car, you're still, rolling up.
Still murdering somebody.
Mm-hmm. So Edward James Olmos, the actor, rewrote portions of like the original story, twisting the facts around, because it gave Cadena's life story more of like a redemptive quality. Like you'd kind of feel some feels for, you know how they sometimes do that in films.
Yeah.
But this did not sit well with Lammy, and they felt like these changes were an affront to Cadena's legacy as a martyr. Mm-hmm. So most upsetting about the film to the Mexican mafia were the male rape scenes.
Oh yeah.
That were shown. So almost a Santana character is showed being raped at knife point by another inmate.
Yeah, I bet that didn't go well
when they're in the youth camp.
How they viewed that.
No, it did not sit well. I mean, it was completely an affront to the culture, because gay sex is forbidden in the Mexican mafia. And then there was also the implication that being raped led to the character having trouble performing sexually with a woman. So in the film, like there's this whole scene where he's like having sex with a woman, and like they're showing like these flashbacks to the rape scene. And then,
so it's like making him appear weak and impotent. And
well, and then he like flips her over and is trying to like do her. I mean, you're supposed to like understand he's trying to do her anally. They don't like say it explicitly.
Well, and that's, I mean, a big leap anyways, assuming
it is a big leap.
That's a big assumption that was made by the producers.
Yes. So you can see why Lame would not be down with this.
No.
Portrayal and the depiction, especially
quite rude. I mean,
it's supposed to be fictional, like names were changed, but so much is so spot on. Like you have to understand, you would know like, oh, they're trying to portray me. Like it's so much of it is spot on. And then at the end of the movie, the main character turns his back on Lame. Mm-hmm. And then is shown being murdered by his own gang. So that isn't what happened. He never turned his back on Lame, and he was murdered by a rival gang in real life.
Oh, okay. So they made it look like he did. Did he turn people in, or why did he in the movie? Why did they make it sound like he turned on them?
I haven't seen it. It was something in prison. Maybe he was trying to like set up an alliance. I think it was.
Okay.
That wasn't welcomed.
Got it.
But
that never happened. So.
No, that was Hollywood fiction. And so the Mexican mafia, like I said, they forbid gay sex, and Cadena never left Lame, and his fellow gang members didn't turn against him. So here's a photo of the real Mexican mafia members, including Joe Morgan and the real leader, Cadena, in 1966. And you told me, would you fuck with these people? Because I would not. I mean, look at them.
No.
So this one's Joe Morgan up here, and I'm not sure which one Cadena is, but he's in that photo.
They look hardcore.
Yeah, pretty.
Like they're in a gang. They are.
So in real life, Kadani was stabbed almost 100 times.
Jeez.
And thrown over a third floor prison balcony, like I said, by the Nuestra family assassins. That's why I wanted to see if your dad had seen
My dad
this.
Worked at the
Because wasn't he
third hung, tier.
Held over by yeah, his yeah, yeah. ankles over the
over
balcony?
Over the third tier balcony, yeah.
Yeah, so I really would like to know if you've seen this movie and like what his thoughts are.
Yeah, I will ask him.
Okay. So the manner of death in the film is similar, but like the circumstances are totally different. Okay. So I want to talk about Joe Morgan because he's an interesting fellow because he is a white member of this Mexican gang.
I would say he looked white in that photo.
He looked white because he is white.
Got it. I thought it was a glare, perhaps.
It was not a glare. So he rose to heights in the Mexican mafia, but he wasn't Mexican. He was born in 1929 in San Pedro, California. And when his family was, when he was 12, his family moved to East LA and he joined the Maravilla gang, one of the oldest documented gangs in Los Angeles. So he moved to a Hispanic neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And when he was 16, he was sent to San Quentin prison for killing his girlfriend's husband.
Wow.
So San Quentin is an adult prison. That's like serious prison.
Yeah, that's definitely murdering somebody.
Yeah, so he was 16. His girlfriend was 32. And he killed her husband and buried him in a shallow grave.
Wow. Okay. He means business.
He's serious. He tried to escape from San Quentin and he got shot in the leg.
Man, he has no fear.
His leg was amputated and then he had a prosthetic leg for the rest of his life. So prison guards and the media called him Peg Leg, but his friends and associates didn't call him that. So if you look him up, everything calls him Joe Peg Leg Morgan, but that wasn't like what his friends or family called him.
Gotcha. Some people taking liberties.
Yeah. And even though he had the prosthetic leg, he was a badass at handball in prison. Like, freaking badass. And that is shown in the film. Like, they show them playing handball. And, you know, it's like just interesting to see these hard criminals like playing schoolyard games. But
getting into some handball.
You don't have anything else to do. You're going to get into some handball.
Yeah, I'm sure it's pretty competitive.
Yeah, it looked serious. Very serious.
Serious handball.
Serious handball. Yeah. So he was good. Good at the handball. So in 1955, he was released from prison, robbed a bank like within a year about, and was sent back to prison. Then he masterminded the largest prison break in LA's history. 11 men escaped from LA County Jail through a pipe shaft, and they did this with hacksaw blades he had hidden his prosthetic leg.
Oh, wow.
So I'm thinking he probably, you remember how your dad said like they would go to shop, like they could make things?
Yeah.
And we're like, why are they giving access to like tools and deadly weapons and razors and all these things?
Allowed to have barbecues.
Yeah, I'm thinking he was probably in shop, like stuffed some hacksaw blades in his prosthetic leg. Nobody thought to look at it. There was this whole prison break that he masterminded. So he had this huge rep. And in 1970, he became the very first non-Mexican recruited member of LAMI. He could speak Spanish fluently. He identified with Latina culture and heritage. And he was never considered an outsider in the LAMI organization. He rose to be a major decision maker about all things within and out of prison. At age 64, he had spent more than 40 years of his life in prison. So most of his life in prison. So it's like in and out.
Wow.
And, you know, with that kind of life, you make a life in prison. Like, there's structure. There's
super institutionalized.
It's organized.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he rose to power, like decision making in prison. Mm-hmm. And though, like when you're a part of this gang, like there's this connection, there's this conduit between inside life and outside life, and it's connected. Like, things can happen. You can make things happen.
Make things happen.
Both in and out, depending on, you know, no matter where you are. Like, if you're high up enough, if you're outside and you're high up, you can make things happen. In prison, if you're in prison, you can make things happen. So after he was diagnosed with inoperable liver cancer, his wife applied for a compassionate release, which I guess you can apply to get people out of prison if they have less than 6 months to live. But he died before the paperwork could be completed.
Paperwork does take a long time.
Joe Morgan is definitely known as a legend to many Latino gangs in California. So here's the three known people that I could find in the research that were killed.
Okay.
Charlie Brown Manriquez, a Mexican mafia member who was an unofficial paid consult to the American Me movie.
Oh.
So he would like give them info on how to like portray things. So he was slain in March 1992 outside a Los Angeles housing project.
Because probably their first question was, who the F told them that that's what we do?
Yeah,
what
that yep, like. Exactly. So he was gunned down.
Jeez. Was that a drive-by or a one-foot drive-by?
One foot stop. I tried to find details on this and there just wasn't a lot of details.
Okay. Yeah.
There was the most details on the killing of Ana Lizarraga, who was killed in Boyle Heights, and she was known as the gang lady. She worked as an anti-gang counselor for community youth gang services and tried to steer youth away from a life of crime. And she actually grew up in that same place. And she was gunned down execution style in her driveway by two masked men. And an officer in a passing patrol car witnessed the shooting. And within minutes, police arrested one suspect who had just been released from prison. And then the other, at the time of the article I read, had escaped and not been identified. So the person they did get, per court records, Joker Gonzalez, age 29 at the time of the murder, received official initiation into La M.A. as a reward for a job well done in killing the gang lady. And the detective on the case said, this is an execution. Somebody lies in wait. They don't say a thing and then fill you full of bullets. And police at the time noted Miss Lizarraga's killing was the second murder of someone associated with the film, but they didn't have any connection to the film. So the third was Manuel Rocky Luna, killed over a year later. He also was another unpaid consultant on American Me. And
I mean, it kind of sucks that they didn't get paid and they got shot.
I know, right?
I mean,
he helped with research and met with Olmos leading up to the film for a couple years to discuss Latino gang culture. And then over the summer of 1993, Luna had upset his superiors in La M.A. by dragging his feet in carrying out an assigned execution of another Mexican mafia member. And so, you know, after the American Me bullshit, like, that was pretty much wrote his.
Well, and it's not like, I mean, all those people. It doesn't mean that they were the ones that gave the input that was really bad. I mean, it could have been producers or whoever, like, we need to make this more interesting or upsell it or whatever. And that sucks for those
people.
Because if they're experts, they probably know a lot of that.
Already. Yeah, we don't know exactly what they told, but the fact that the portrayal was so insulting and they were involved in helping with it, like, that pretty much sealed the deal for them.
Yeah.
So I remember when I did the Tupac and Biggie murders, I got a lot of information from this YouTube channel called DJ Vlad. And I went back to it for this because this channel shows a lot of people talking about gang life. And there are people that are you know, involved. So I watched these interviews with actor Danny Trejo. Do you know who he is?
I've heard it.
You'll recognize his face. It's okay. Very, very familiar. So that face.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, he's very...
Yeah, he's great.
Very recognizable. So he got... he was never in a gang, but he'd been in prison, like, knows a lot of people, connected. Legit. He's legit. So he said 10 people actually died as a result of being involved in the film.
Mm.
He said 4 out here and 6 in prison.
Mm.
And so I think, you know, if that's the case, like, media just didn't pick up on it. Law enforcement didn't pick up on the connection
with the prison deaths. Yeah.
Yeah. So Edward James Olmos, who was the star and the director of American Me, had a Mexican mafia hit on him. So a clear, like, if you see him,
kill him,
you know, green light. Yeah. And there was a time, like, it definitely was not safe for him to be walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so concerned about the death threats that he was getting that he contacted the FBI and he actually went into hiding for a time.
Probably a good idea. They do run and drive-bys.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, he made some mistakes. I think he should have gotten permission for doing that portrayal, you know, when it's so close to home and so clearly, like, you're portraying this person.
Somebody. Well, and I think that's kind of the, almost the dehumanizing of the people by saying that we don't warrant consent and we can change your story however we want.
I just think it was a bad decision on his part.
Yeah.
Because the Mexican mafia, they hated that movie. And, you know, if 10 people died from that, like, that's pretty deadly.
I mean, I'm sure he's going to be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rest at night. I'd sleep with one eye open, as I say.
One eye open? That'd be hard to do. Only dolphins do that. No, that's half their brain. Just kidding.
Well, that's all I have.
No, that's good. No, I didn't. I'm going to have to watch that movie now.
You should watch it. It's actually a really good movie. Like,
yeah,
you just have to take it as Hollywood fiction.
Yeah, I'll check it out and I'll talk to my dad and see what his thoughts are.
Maybe you can watch it together. That seems like a good dad-daughter activity. I don't
really want to watch like a...
You don't want to watch a prison rape scene.
Yeah. And my dad honestly doesn't really like to watch prison stuff because I tried to get him to watch Orange is the New Black.
Oh.
He's like, really? I don't want to watch a women's prison. Like, that's the worst prison. And... And I was in one for 20 years. Like, I don't want to.
He just doesn't want to deal with it.
No. And I mean, they make it very comical and lighthearted. Yeah. And
well, this one is not comical and lighthearted. Like, it for sure tries to portray like hard prison life.
Yeah.
Well, ask him if he's seen it. I'm curious to know his feedback.
I will do that. All right.
That's all I've got.
Wonderful. Well, it was wonderful seeing you today. And
wonderful seeing you as well.
Until next time.
Don't fuck with Lammy.
And go light on the nutmeg.
Yes.